in this sequence that I put together is what I call, using a phrase from the Buddhist teachings, the bliss of blamelessness. But it's that is pointing to integrity, that living with integrity is such a key foundation for real well-being. The Buddha said, this is the basis for inner peace. If you want inner peace, then act in a way that does not cause suffering to others or to yourself. And here I'll read a little quote from the Buddha. He says, see if this makes sense to you. For one who leads a virtuous life, it is a natural law that remorse will not arise. For one free of remorse, it is a natural law that gladness will arise. For one who is glad at heart, it is a natural law that joy will arise. Goes on to say, for one who is joyful, it is a natural law that happiness and contentment and then peace and then ultimately deep freedom arise. But it starts with leading a virtuous life. One is free of remorse. And that's where that phrase, the bliss of blamelessness, comes through. And in one discourse, he describes, this is in the Anguttara Nikaya, he says, there are four kinds of happiness in the world that anybody could understand, whether or not you've been meditating or have a spiritual practice. This is for lay people. He said, there's the happiness of being free of debt, very practical, right? There's the happiness of being so prosperous that you can take care of yourself and your loved ones. Then there's the happiness that can come from being even more prosperous, where you can experience the joy of being generous with those even beyond your close circle. And then there is this fourth, this bliss of blamelessness, where you are acting completely aligned with your values, acting with integrity. And in this discourse, he then goes on to say, compared to the bliss of blamelessness, that last one, the first three are not 1/16th as potent a source of happiness. I don't know how he figured that out, but that's the equation.
Did you say that?
That compared to the bliss of blamelessness, those first three of being free of debt and taking care of your loved ones and being generous with others are not 1/16th as strong, as potent a source of inner well-being. Because if you're prosperous but you're out of alignment with your values, you can't really enjoy it. There's something off inside. So he said, go for that one. That one doesn't depend on your good fortune in external circumstances. This is one that anybody can experience if they choose. So this is a real source of awakening joy. And when we are out of alignment with our values, which happens every now and then, probably for some of us, until we are saints and fully enlightened beings, we might miss the mark from time to time. That is, by the way, the actual definition of the word sin, is missing the mark. It's such a more benign way of holding that word sin, just being a bit off and missing the mark of what our inner compass says is true and good and aligned. So this is something to pay attention to. And I just want to give you a little bit of a teaching on how we are sowing the seeds for either suffering or happiness in every moment. Again, from the Buddha's teachings, he says we are planting seeds in every single moment of either sorrow or suffering or happiness. And four of these ways that the seeds are planted are in the action itself, you're planting a seed, in the energy that comes back to you, in the likelihood of repeating. Don't worry about this, I'll take you through this so you'll kind of understand it, and in the recollection. If your actions come from greed, hatred, or delusion, or another way of saying that is attachment, aversion, or ignorance, you are sowing the seeds for suffering. If they're coming from the opposite, from non-greed, from generosity, from non-hatred, from kindness, non-delusion or clarity, you are planting the seeds for happiness and well-being. That's the basic source of suffering or happiness. So let's just take two little scenarios in your mind. Okay, so close your eyes for a moment. And I'd like you to think about a time that maybe you acted, you missed the mark a bit. Maybe you sent that email, you clicked the send button, and then later you thought, ooh, that might have been, not have been the best thing to do. Or you snapped at a loved one or a coworker or whatever. Just think of some time, maybe in your way distant past, if you need to, where you acted a little bit out of alignment. And as you bring that situation to mind, let's take a look at these different seeds that got planted. Notice, how did it feel in the action, or maybe just a little bit after the action? How did it feel inside to act from anger or confusion? Maybe it felt good for a moment, but then afterwards. What was the energy like coming back to you from the receiving end? Was there a thank you for your feedback? Or was there a different kind of energy that came back? The likelihood of that occurring again was probably reinforced, because we're creatures of habit. So when you did that, you practiced that habit and perhaps created the seeds for it to be similarly activated. And when you just thought about it right now, as you're thinking about it, how does it feel? Probably not so good. Ooh, yeah, I really did do that. So those are four ways that seeds of suffering were planted. In the act, or right after the act, the energy that came back, the practicing of that habit, and in the recollection. Okay, I won't leave you here. Now take a nice deep breath, and we'll clean the board in the mind and in the heart. And now we get to the good news. Think of a time where you acted with real kindness and thoughtfulness and generosity, or maybe just a random act of kindness being there for somebody. And as you bring that to mind, again, these four seeds planted, how did it feel in the moment as that spontaneous kindness came through you? How did it feel in your body and in your mind? Just a genuine, spontaneous goodness shining through. What was the energy that came back? Appreciation, gratitude, love, connection. The likelihood of that occurring again was greater because you just practiced that habit. And so you planted the seeds for a skillfulness. And just now, as you're thinking about it, how does it feel to recall that kind act? Probably pretty good. Yeah, sometimes I do some okay things. So there's four seeds in the moment, in the energy that comes back, in the practiced habit, the repetition, and in the recollection. Okay, you can open your eyes if you like. Very simple, isn't it? But when you think about it that way, it's pretty powerful. It's like, whoa, okay, the first time I thought about that, I thought, I've got a choice here in every moment. I think I want to clean up my act. Not that it's completely all cleaned and spotless, but, you know, we all are human, but from time to time, if you reflect, whoa, okay, what am I doing here right now? It makes a difference. And there's a place inside of us that knows when we're off. In the teachings, the wholesome factors are called hirayana otapam, which are usually translated as moral shame and moral dread. It sounds very Victorian English, but those are wholesome states. It's like a place in you that knows, this is a little off. Or, if somebody I respect finds out, my reputation will be shot and I feel guilty or embarrassed, whatever. We know that place inside. What do we call it? What's the word in English? Conscience. Yeah. We're wired up with this conscience. And it's a pretty darn good thing we are. It's dicey enough as it is, even having that wired up. Imagine if we didn't have any conscience. But we do. It's amazing. It's built into the system, and all we need to do, a big all, is to listen carefully to the place that knows. There's a place that knows inside. So this is where mindfulness practice comes in, to see that we have a choice in every moment makes all the difference in the world. Did you want to do your exercise? So we can just do one little exercise here that Jane could lead us in, and maybe have you get in touch with your own wisdom.
James, there's a question back.
Oh yeah, question. Yes.
Mm-hmm. We know what the right thing to do is, but we don't feel it. So there's a contradiction between how we might respond.
You know what the right thing is, but you don't feel it?
No,
Okay. So being honest and doing what you know is going to be causing some regret or suffering. So first of all, there's no way that you can please everybody. Mm-hmm. Just let go of that one right away. Okay. But if you got to decide, do I want to be right or do I want to have some well-being inside? And the guideline that the Buddha says, very simple, saying what's truthful and what's useful. Useful is a big area. Is this going to be useful? And saying it in a kind way so that somebody is possibly better able to hear it. If you say something and you're just met with resistance and with throwing flames on the fire because the timing isn't right or the way you say it, what's the point? So you want to be even wiser and perhaps not click the send button until you're getting clear on your intention. And it makes a very big difference if you're clear on your intention, because you can say, if somebody says to you, are you ready for some feedback? You know, California style. You might say, ugh. But if somebody says, there's something in the way, I so value our, something like this, I really value our relationship, and I want to have as good a relationship as possible with you, and there's something that my mind or my heart is snagged on, and if you feel up to it, when you're ready, I'd like to share this with you so we can have a really good connection. You might be a little bit more apt to be interested. Oh, they really care about me. I want to hear this. So it makes a huge difference, the energy that you're coming out with, why you're saying what you're saying. Doesn't mean to be a wallflower, but you want to be picking and choosing and seeing, what am I trying to create here? Okay.
So
there's a woman over here.
Yeah. Attachment, aversion, and ignorance, or delusion, or confusion, which really is kind of getting lost in your story, and on a more technical level, identifying with your experience. This is, I'm right, and they're not. And everybody is walking around with their own reality, but we're so sure that we've got the right one, and if only everybody would see it like we would, things would be much simpler in this world, you know. But we get attached to our own bubble of experience and thinking that's the truth.
Okay, I wanted to say good morning to you all also, and I'm really glad to be with you. And I just wanted to add on to something James brought up earlier about the Kalyanamitta groups. I've been in which is the spiritual friends group, and I really believe in getting together with like-minded participants in a smaller group, and I've done that for many, many years as a participant, and it's really a nurturing time for me to get to know people and get to dialogue with others and go deeper into the practice, how it really informs our daily lives, because that's where the rubber meets the road. And I've also done it as a leader for 5 years. A friend of mine and I led a Kalyanamitta group together, which met every other week. And as a leader, it was very gratifying too, because I really learned from the participants, and it made me deepen my own practice. And I've also led Awakening Joy groups, and that's also been a wonderful way to deepen my sense of the material and really practicing the material. It's, of course, great to come together for a weekend and hear very inspiring information. But it's really the practice of it that's going to make us happier and more able to contribute to other people's happiness. So I just wanted to add in my two cents on that, because at the end of the day, people will be meeting that are interested in either being participants or leaders. And I hope that you consider that. And you might not have ever thought about being a leader of a group, and you might want to just sit in as a possible participant. But it's a wonderful way to sort of get to know people better and support each other through this whole process. So, thanks. And I wanted to just add on to the conversation about integrity by leading you through an exercise. So if you just sit quietly. So thinking of another situation where you've somehow chosen to act wisely, notice how it felt in your mind and your body. And if you can, recall what helped you decide to take the higher road. Perhaps you were more rested, or perhaps you had given yourself some nourishing time, or there might be a lot of different ways that support you in acting with the highest integrity, whether it means extending yourself or maybe restraining yourself. Complete this sentence for yourself. I'm most likely to speak or act skillfully when. Okay, now we'd like to invite you to get in dyads or triads and just have a chat about what supports you in making, when it's a tough decision and there's the easy route or the route that might bring immediate gratification, and then there's the more difficult but perhaps or probably more in the long run, more optimal route.